Welcome to a special episode of the Point Shot Hockey Podcast presented by Bench Clears and High Stick Vodka. We do have a contest running right now that will go until the end of May with our fine folks at Bench Clears. You can win a free item of your choosing from benchclears.com by making an order and using the Area 51 Sent Me promo code to get yourself 10% off on your order from there. At the end of the month, if you show me proof of purchase, you will be entered into the draw to potentially win that item of your choosing. So make sure that you don't miss out on that special offer there, both for the discount and potentially free item as well. So thanks again to Bench Clears for presenting this podcast. So without further ado, we look forward to our interview and discussion with Rachel Dorey.
Vancouver selects from the University of Michigan, Quinn Hughes.
From Timrå, Elias Pettersson.
From Waterloo of the USHL, Brock Besser.
From the London Knights of the Canadian Hockey League, Bo Horvat.
To the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for JT Miller.
Thatcher Demko with an amazing 43-save performance says, let's play Game 6.
Ladies and gentlemen, please make some noise and welcome the 14th captain of your Vancouver Canucks.
Hey, Rachel, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming on.
Sorry about that. My work meeting went a half an hour late, and I had to sprint to get food.
Oh, shit. No worries.
Yeah, no worries good. At all.
Yeah, we're just basking in our misery over here.
Oh, God. What was the final score in the game?
6-2.
6-2,
I think. Oh, good stuff. Awesome stuff. Definitely what you want there.
Yeah. And not a high note, really, right?
Sliding into 24th place. It's beautiful.
Just in time to take a dude that no one's heard of.
Yeah, exactly.
You just know we're going off the board too, don't you?
Yep.
No, yes,
that's what happens when you get rid of Judd.
Yes. Oh, man. And that was if only we knew that was just the beginning of the end.
And they mitigated that mistake by trading away their first and second last year. It was kind of a nice little 4D chess move to distract, you know.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we don't need Judd. Why don't you need Judd? Because we don't have any draft picks. Yeah, we don't believe in them.
Let's save ourselves the salary because we're not drafting anybody anyways.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Yeah. Wow.
It's just this awesome around here.
Yeah. So,
I mean, to be fair, I have no sympathy because your team has actually been to the Stanley Cup final in your lifetime and mine has not.
You know what? Fair enough. Well, mind you, we prefer they win the Stanley Cup final, but
I appreciate that perspective though, because you know, so often we hear about, you know, oh, you never won a cup, you never won a cup. And I made that point a couple weeks ago that, you know, unless you've seen it, like who cares if you've won a cup that you've never seen, right? Like what good did that do?
I wear my Bayern shirt because they have won like I think 80 trophies in my lifetime. So like that counts. I saw, to be fair, like I was I was there when the Germans won the World Cup. So like that also counts.
Absolutely.
So like the only thing I really haven't seen is a Leafs Cup. Like I actually worked for TFC won MLS Cup. But yeah, like my mother was a year old when the Leafs won the cup. Probably not even actually.
Yeah.
And
at least she can tell you stories.
Yeah. She's very not a year old. Well, she like lived in China at the time too. She lived in Hong Kong. So it's not like she was here.
Yeah, exactly. She wasn't at the parade. Like to me, you know, no parade doesn't count.
Exactly.
Was that in 67?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That was my dad's birth year, 67. So my dad hasn't even seen it. So
my parents weren't even born back then.
Yeah, no, like my father was born in 68, and we kind of agreed. We're like, okay, so let's say, because it would be the most Leafs thing ever for them to finally like break the drought in the middle of a pandemic where you're not really supposed to be having a parade and like we're not even allowed to play tennis right now. But like if anybody at the government thinks that they're going to prevent anybody from celebrating, like, I've got some news for you. There's a lot of people willing to risk a $750 ticket to make their own parade.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
It would be the equivalent of telling Cubs fans, like, nope, sorry, you're actually not allowed to celebrate. Oh my God. They would be like, really?
Last year on the run, I had some people being like, oh, can you imagine if this is the year that we win the cup and we're not actually going to be able to do the parade? Like, you know, that's why I believe that we're going to win the cup, because, you know, again, you know, it would just be the most Canucks thing ever to win it in the pandemic season that everyone says asterisk, which, just to be clear, is what we'll say if the Leafs win the cup this year.
Although it's like arguably harder, like to me, the way I look at it is, and I feel like I'm opposite to everybody else, it is arguably harder to do what Tampa did last year and to do whoever wins this year, because you're seeing this with the World Championship. Guys are so taxed. Like, they don't want to play hockey anymore. The Kachucks don't want to play. The Hughes don't want to play. Stützle doesn't even want to represent his country, which is like super rare for any German. Like all these Canadian guys, like we have random AHLers playing, which we've never seen. Owen Power and Matty Beniers are playing, which is very odd. Like, it's one of those things where you can literally see in the guys' decision making the total taxing that this kind of bubble and this season has taken on guys. And so, like, the way I look at it is any team who wins in a bubble like situation or in a situation like this without fans, like, it's harder. It really is. Cause like you're totally isolated from society. And so that's why I think what Tampa did was super special. And then they like circumvented the cap.
Well, thank you for that. I just want to make sure it's clear though. Those were really good points, but it won't matter if it's the Leafs. Cause we just have to come up with something, right?
Connor McDavid's record breaking season doesn't count.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Whatever he did this year doesn't matter. He's honestly so dumb. I'm like, man,
you take what you get and you use what you can, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, I know McDavid's best friend really well. Like the guy that lives at McDavid's house in the season in Aurora, like that's my friend, and we grew up together. And he told me like December, January, he's like, no, you watch. McDavid's going to be a monster this year. Like, he is going to make this best player in the world argument totally moot. And I'm like, okay, like, I'm sure he will because he pays attention. And he's like, no, he's getting 100 points. And I look at him, I'm like, Nick, 56 games, he's not getting 100 points. And he goes, want to bet? I'm like, well, no, because I'm not going to bet against Connor. That's silly. And then, like, lo and behold, here we are. And so I texted him the other day and he goes, just so you know, there's another level for the playoffs. I'm like, that should be illegal.
Like, yeah, that's not NHL anymore. That's one more. Yeah. That's another
I don't know
tier.
What we're doing, but you're on the moon and I don't know what world you're in, but you are there by yourself.
Yeah. Well, I have him stomping Winnipeg this round. Like, we can't go too much further than that right now, obviously, but like I have them just dismantling Winnipeg.
Yeah, like I think the only way this is a series, which it very well could end up happening, is if two things happen. Mike Smith turns back into a pumpkin and Connor Hellebuyck is that Cinderella coach that has like a 960 in the playoffs. Cause both of those things, distinct possibilities, specifically the pumpkin one.
Yes, that's true. That's why I don't like to put too much behind Edmonton, but it's hard to discount anything that Connor McDavid is doing right now.
Hellebuyck's also struggled against Edmonton this season, so there's that.
Well, no Dubois or Ehlers for game one tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
And we all know defense is their weakness, and so Connor is just going to carve through them. I'm super glad it's not illegal, because I really want to be able to see that on TV. Especially when it's not going to be the Canucks, and you know the blissful. I guess it's now blissfully over the season. You know, we don't have to hurt anymore. We don't have to worry.
Because there's like protests that are going to happen, and I'm thinking maybe there should be some changes other than let's bring alumni in and hope everyone is happy with that.
At least not on ice, I guess. But
yeah. Well, let's get into that a little bit, because this has been a year to forget, for or one to remember, but unfortunately so for the Canucks. We've had everything from the obvious schedule issues, the COVID outbreak, their record, the Jake Virtanen allegations, all of it. We've had the Fire Benning banner flown over the city, and now it looks like there's going to be an Aquilini one flying, as well as potential protests at Rogers Arena. Where the hell do you go from here if you're the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, I'm going to state the obvious here. I think you need to clean out the front office, or at minimum, like, take the keys away. But at that point, like, you might as well just clean them out. And I think the thing that's most concerning to me, like, from an outside perspective, is the Aquilinis clearly aren't happy with Benning and the job that he's done. And they clearly would fire him in any other circumstances. And the fact they don't want to fire him because they have to pay out next year of his contract, if I'm Gary Bettman, that's deeply concerning to me, because Gary Bettman's number one job is to protect the Shield, which is the NHL brand. And it is bad for your brand if you have a Canadian team that is very clearly so cash-strapped that they can't even afford to pay a general manager to ensure that their team can be remotely acceptable, right? Because at that point, like, Canucks fans are, they're different than Leafs fans. Leafs fans showed up with, like, bags on their head, but they still paid and, like, nobody canceled their season tickets. Canucks fans, like, I know from, like, a source within the organization that, like, over 1,000 people have canceled their season seats. Like, that is actual tangible dollar revenue. And if I'm Gary Bettman, that is deeply concerning to me. So there's that element to it. But for me, I really do think Jim and John at least have to go. I would keep Ryan Beach. I think he's fantastic. And the first people I would be calling are the computer boys, Cam Lawrence, Josh Wiesbach, Reese Jessup, because they found, like, Marchessault, Smith,
Verhaeghe,
Duclair, all for, like, less than the equivalent of one Tyler Myers, which is not great.
I would take the former package. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I will give you this. You can have Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau, option one, for 11.8 million dollars, or option two, you can have Antoine Roussel, Jay Beagle, and Louis Erickson for $11.675 million. Which one do you pick?
I have no response.
So my feelings are so hurt. this is the reality we've had for, well, going on potentially 8 years.
I don't know how you can accept this level of, it's not even mediocrity anymore. It's just downright horrendousness at this point. And it's like, okay, if we saw signs that management was evolving, because I'm all about people that can adapt, right? If you show you can adapt, then you deserve another chance, let's say, right? So if Jim Benning signed these terrible contracts that I just mentioned, right, which he did objectively, it happened. And then he goes, okay, that was a mistake. I need to learn from that. And then didn't sign any Bodanker contracts. And I'd be like, okay, he's evolving. He's learned from his errors. This is clearly someone that's adaptable. Potentially we bring in some new voices and we go from there. He literally just signed the Tyler Myers contract. So that tells me that like right out the window.
Jake Virtanen just on the off season as well. And like letting go Tyler Toffoli that he traded a second and a prospect for.
Yeah, sure.
like this is, to your point, this isn't ancient history. This is all stuff that is still happening. Like, it's still every offseason. There's more. Like,
straight up not talking to Chris Tanev.
Yeah. Like, hey, thanks for your entire career with us.
So important to the team that you couldn't trade him at any point.
No.
Right.
But then he's also not important enough to even give one courtesy phone call to. Yeah.
So I have a theory. Or okay. Not even a theory. I have a degree in sports business. So I kind of like to do two things. I like to do like my hockey brain, which is just like meh, hockey. And then I like to do my sports business brain, which is like running the business and protecting the brand. And from a sports business perspective, I don't know what the Canucks are doing with the flip-flopping, but it is worse for the brand to do that because you've got consumers being like, well, what are you doing? We don't trust you, than to just pay out Benning's contract. So that's the sports management side of it. The hockey side of me is, if I'm Thatcher Demko or Thatcher Demko's agent, we can agree on a contract in principle. But if I'm Demko and I like Ian Clark, my response to Jim Benning is, okay, we've agreed in principle verbally on a contract. I am not signing this contract until you sign Ian Clark. That's what I would have done, because we see what happened to Bobrovsky without Ian Clark, what's happened to Markstrom without Ian Clark, and you can't make a five-year, $25 million investment in a goaltender if you don't know that he's going to be able to perform at that level. And Thatcher Demko, you can't commit to 5 years with an organization and not know who your coach is going to be.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To me, that's like, if I'm Demko, that was poor planning on his part. And maybe he doesn't know that, but his agent should have said, okay, like, we've agreed on number and on term. Like, we're ready to go. We're ready to sign it. It's in the top drawer. We will sign it after you sign Ian Clark.
You could also apply that to Green, right? For the whole team.
Oh, yeah. Like, if I'm Elias Pettersson, I'm going, okay. So I want to know who the coach is first. 100%. And by the way, like, people are coming with offer sheets. And so help me God, if Seattle offers him 12 or 10.5, which is only, I believe, it's not the four first. It's that's like the threshold, like, just below.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be a fourth, second, and third. Yeah.
To Seattle.
I or would to do like it if I was Seattle.
Or Detroit, of course.
Detroit?
Why not?
Yeah. Detroit's got like a casual $50 million in cap space going into this offseason, I believe.
Like, and I think they have a history of Swedes doing not terrible there.
Yeah, they do okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the European players tend to do not terribly in Detroit. And quite frankly, like, was Detroit worse than Vancouver this year? Yes, they were. Is Detroit on a much better path than Vancouver? I don't think that could be debated.
Yeah, just look at who's running the ship. The ownership with a reputation of hiring the right people and being hands-off, or literally the exact opposite. And of course, a GM with a sterling reputation, you know, done nothing but wonderful things in Tampa Bay, or exactly the opposite. Yeah.
So I don't know if you heard what I said on Puck Soup, but essentially it was Steve Yzerman and Joe Sakic are playing 5D chess, and Jim Benning is gluing macaroni to construction paper. Like, I had a meme made and everything, and it's got like Yzerman and Sakic's heads on it and Benning, and he's just like gluing macaroni off to the side. But that's what's happening.
Yeah. The only thing, I don't even think it's getting onto the paper. Like, is it getting onto the paper? It just feels like the macaroni is being glued to his fingertips at this point, and then it's inhibiting him from gluing further macaronis to his hand.
Like, I think that might be like, if someone could inhibit him from making more poor decisions for the Canucks, though, that would probably be a good thing.
Well, and that was all the money. Like,
that was a really good point that you made. It's not that he's made mistakes, because every GM makes mistakes. No GM is perfect. No one's expecting perfection. But it's that he keeps making the same mistakes over and over again. And that's what's so maddening about it. It's, oh, well, don't worry, you've got some cap space clearing up, and boom, a whole bunch of, you know, bad contracts that come in that, you know, you literally immediately regret.
Well, there's one time I've been fooled by Mr. Booth. Only once. Every other time, like, I've known. And the one time I was fooled by him was when he said the Canucks have re-signed Brandon Sutter. And the reason that fooled me was because I was like, yeah, that seems like something they would do. They don't have Elias Pettersson or Quinn Hughes signed. Brandon Sutter, lock him up. Let's go.
It's still going to happen. I still think it's going to happen.
I would not at all be stunned if he's brought back.
No, me neither.
What's going to be great is when they sign Brandon Sutter and then Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson don't have enough, like they don't have enough money for them. It's going to be incredible. But Quinn Hughes has that, what I like to call the black hole ELC.
Yeah.
And Pavel Zacha had that when I was in New Jersey. And I remember like Steve Pellegrini just kind of taught me what it was. And when Chuck Fletcher, because Steve ended up leaving, to go be the AGM and cap guru of the Islanders, who basically just do like magical things with a cap that nobody knows. Chuck Fletcher came in and negotiated the contract and basically said to Pav, he's like, well, you can't go anywhere. So like, do you want to play hockey or not? And that's essentially what happened. So like, it's not like they could be offer sheeted, but knowing the Canucks management and how they operate, what they should do is get Elias Pettersson done first prior to the RFA signing window and then do Hughes, because you're not afraid of losing Hughes because he can't go anywhere. But knowing the Canucks, they probably don't know that, and they will sign Quinn Hughes and then sign Elias Pettersson.
Well, that's the agent thing, right? It's not like you can sneak one deal in with Pettersson without their agent being fully, you know, the same agent being fully aware of Hughes too, right? That's, I think, the massive complication with having the same agent for us, because you're absolutely right. Strategically, that makes a ton of sense. You know, I don't know if you heard the VanCast last night, but the kind of tidbit that I'm still, you know, is in the back of my head is that Tom thinks that there could be the potential of multiple people seeking trade requests. And I don't know, of course, in the deepest, darkest part of my mind, of course, disaster scenario thinker here as the Canuck fan now. How Pettersson's wrist injury, how weird was that? The fact that he, you know, was day to day and then never came back. Is he truly happy here? The moment in the early of the season, you know, I think it was our first win in overtime, and you know, the bench erupts and Pettersson just sat there. And that to me just stuck out like a massive red flag.
If I were a Canucks fan, and actually my childhood best friend is a Canucks fan. I turned her on to hockey and she loves the Canucks. And
what have you done?
I grew up a Leafs fan. There's nobody that's had more pain than me.
The time was like, try something different.
And her favorite player is Elias Pettersson. And that she literally only likes the team because of him. Like, she just loves watching him. And I had to legitimately, like, have a conversation with her the other day and be like, hey, like, just so you know, there is a decent chance that your favorite player is playing for a different team next year. And she's like, what? I thought he was the future captain. I'm like, yep, until about, like, 5 months ago. And the thing you have, I think... Quite honestly, this part's kind of flying under the radar. I think apart from bringing in the Sedins would do in terms of the fact that they actually pay attention to hockey, and they would be former players that I think in the ilk of Steve Yzerman would actually be very good in a front office. I think part of the allure of bringing in the Sedins is they're hoping that their relationship with EP and just like the whole being Swedish thing can help mend the completely broken fences that are there. Because from what I know, EP could have played like post pandemic and essentially, like, I don't know if it was him or his agent or whatever, but just went, nope, not doing it. Which could be
and
fair,
walk away from signing, you know, salary bonuses too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He had a games played bonus that he walked away from, and like, if I don't know if you see his fashion sense, but he certainly spends a lot of money on clothes. So like, I don't know that I'd be walking away from that unless I was super unhappy. But to be fair, I was actually really surprised to see no Canucks opt out after the COVID outbreak, just because I've done some like medical research, and the effects of having COVID when you're just like a regular person are immense. But like elite athletes, like you're putting your body in anaerobic deficit at almost 2 times quicker than you normally would if you didn't have COVID. And the quicker you're in anaerobic deficit, your likelihood of having a severe muscle injury or tear goes up exponentially. So I'm kind of surprised that some players who had it badly didn't opt out. But with Pettersson, like everything I've heard was he like had the Canucks been in the playoff race, like he would have played.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Well, not, unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me all that much. Like, because like Malcolm was saying, the body language. And I mean, another guy that's like that right now is JT Miller. Like, I don't think that dude has had fun at any minute or second of being a Canuck this year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was one that potentially asked out.
Okay. I'm going to be careful with how I say this because I don't know how much is out there versus like how much I know. What I can tell you is this. The Canucks were one of the worst teams when it came to COVID violations this year in terms of like not following the protocol. And I heard from somebody in the dressing room that JT Miller was the worst offender. Like anti-mask, that kind of thing. And so I've heard that from multiple people, including somebody within the confines of the Canucks. And so I think that like him coming out and speaking out and saying what he did, it's all fine to do. But if you're not following the protocols behind the scenes, then like it means nothing. So I think there was a huge disconnect there between him and management. There was definitely disconnects between him and teammates. Because as you can imagine, they obviously weren't thrilled with that behavior, especially somebody like Elias Pettersson, who has been super conscious with COVID. Like he's kind of the exact opposite. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see him traded for the sole purpose of he can no longer be in that dressing room anymore, right? Your team has a massive outbreak and you're still not COVID conscious. Like, what are you doing?
Well, and you're not one of the ones that ended up with it, right? Like he was speaking out as somebody that didn't get COVID, seeing what has happened to, you know, people's families and wives and children and his teammates themselves. So, I mean, that kind of pokes some holes in the whole he's kind of the captain without a letter theory.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing, I would say is there's like, I think Harmon and Dranser pointed it out that there seems to, like a disconnect between the players and management. And I think Harmon brought up the fact, or maybe it wasn't Harmon, it was somebody brought up the fact that there needs to be like a buffer between players and management and ownership because the players feel like they're not being heard. And somebody told me that like during the Canucks, like COVID outbreak, management like Benning, Weisbrod basically had no communication with Canucks players. Like they didn't check in on them. They didn't make an effort to see how they were doing. They did the same with Travis Green. So like, if you're in that position, like I can't even imagine being that way where it's like you have an illness that is literally killing millions of people worldwide and your boss couldn't be bothered to even text you or call you. Like that's just poor leadership from and hockey team or not hockey team. Like it doesn't matter where you are. You could work at the bank like I do or anywhere else, but it, like you have something, your boss should be checking in on you. And like, it really shouldn't even be a second thought. Like that should just be, that's part of your job. And so I think rightfully so, some Canucks players were very angry about that.
Well, that's kind of the definition of being a manager, right? You manage the people under your watch and your supervision. And if you're not, like you said, even extending the smallest little bit of contact, then like a disease that's rendered the world lonely and isolated, like unreal.
And he loves hanging out with the players. Like he more or less has this team, so he has cool friends to hang out with. Like,
that's fair.
This would have been your perfect moment, bro, to try to get some clout with your dudes. Like, yeah.
I'm not doesn't surprised it feel like, that, right?
No yeah, like, doesn't this feel like Murphy's Law? This. Yeah. Like everything yes. that could go wrong has gone wrong. or in this case, it's every poor decision that could be made has been made.
Yeah, it's death of a thousand cuts. Like you keep going back to the same cut, right?
And if someone's good, you retain them. And if someone's bad, you let them go. And we have seen nothing but a steady stream of good people out the door. And guys who we either don't know the description of their job or know them more for what they did with the Orlando Magic or the guy behind the O'Reilly offer sheet that I just still wish that Colorado hadn't claimed on that and you know let him go through
or how about the guy running the anonymous burner Twitter account?
My good friend Bud Jacket, if you're out there.
Yeah.
I miss you. Sorry, I took it too far. Didn't have to block me, but whatever.
But there's okay, so that's the thing though. Like it's just a sideshow. There is a literal German word for what Jim Benning and John Weisbrod are doing, and it translates to it's like an idiom, and it translates to actively making something worse while you try and make it better.
Well, that's dead on. That
yeah.
is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a literal German word for the Canucks. English.
Yeah. Yeah.
The word for it in English is Benning. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think Judd Brackett looks at this and is just kind of like really enjoying the fact that A, he got Marco Rossi at 9 somehow, and like B, doesn't have to deal with any of this?
I'll take this
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and Minnesota's actually good. Like, and they've got really great promise. Like, they're really fun to watch. And I mean, just to think that they're going to be adding like Marco Rossi and
Marat Husnadinov.
Yeah. Like
Ryan O'Rourke.
They've got so much coming. Yeah. Oh,
like I find it hilarious. Like if you look at the first three Judd Brackett picks for the Wild, they were Marco Rossi should not have been there. Marat Husnadinov should not have been there. Ryan O'Rourke right in the range for him to go. Let's take a look at what New Jersey did. Alexander Holtz. Okay, good. That was a good pick.
Yep.
Dawson Mercer. Fantastic value. Well done. And then we get to the third one.
Yes.
Which was so bad that Shakir Muhammadullah. It was so bad that our scout at EP literally went, "What? Why?" Like, and why do I feel like had Vancouver been picking in that spot, they would probably have gone that direction. They would have taken him or Chinahov, and it would have been just
They were probably debating that pick, and it kills me that that's of course the pick, the Canucks pick. Because, of course, there were so many better people there. And I've been one of the guys who never wished we made the JT Miller trade in the first place. Because, again, of course, if we don't make that trade, we don't go on that magical run last year. And we're picking somewhere in the top 10. And those were some beautiful picks that were available in the top 10 last year. Everyone gets to look back and say, well, no, it's, you know, it was Mac Medulin and, you know, a third round pick who I don't know off the top of my head. You know, it's great value for JT Miller. You're being stupid, Malcolm.
Yeah, except like had they drafted like anybody not named Shakir Muhammadullah, like it would not have been a good trade. Like even if they drafted Braden Schneider, let's say, or heaven forbid they drafted Hendrix Lapierre, which is who they should have drafted. Like Canucks fans would have every right to be like, yo, what is going on?
Well, and Braden Schneider, honestly, would be a perfect prospect for the Canucks. A right-handed defenseman that plays physical. Wow. I wonder what team needs one of those.
That can complete a pass?
Yeah.
The completing like, pass thing is nice. I found that.
Yeah, okay, so here's a textbook Hughes partner, right?
There's a defenseman on Canada at the U18s, Ethan Del Mastro. And like, I'm seeing a whole lot of outlets having him ranked like late first round, early second round. So he'll be there for the Canucks. Don't you worry. He had in the semifinals and finals of the World Under 18s, a breakout completion pass percentage of zero. Zero completed passes.
He's nice. Almost as good as Olio Levy, then. Almost.
That's the little thing he has, man. Come on.
So close. So close. You're like, and also actively moving away from Matvei Michkov so that he could walk directly into the slot and go bar down. It's great stuff.
He tried Myers. To turn. He realized he can't turn. He was embarrassed because he couldn't turn, and he put his face in his hand. Like,
yeah, Ambi Turner. Yeah.
I actually heard from a rather reputable source that Judd Brackett did not want to take Olio Levy.
I don't, yeah.
I wish I was surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
That was the draft before he took over, of course. You know,
yeah.
But like, you know, hey, to be glass half full here, let me finish. If had he not taken Yo Levy, or Benning and Weisbrod not taken Yo Levy, maybe Judd would have never gotten the power to take over after that point, right? There's your there's your glass half full perspective from Malcolm. That's the only one I have today.
Wow, I'm surprised. We've already maxed out my prediction for
yeah, best. Yeah.
So who are the Canucks going to take at six? Because I have some thoughts.
Well, hey, six? We, I think we're picking nine right now.
Oh, well.
This is my prediction, and tell me if I'm anywhere close on yours. Chaz Lucius is who I see the Canucks taking, centerman.
If they pick in the top 10, that would be Shakir Mukhamudulin bad.
That's what I'm expecting. The exact response.
Right.
Okay, so here are some names that I would avoid. Luke Hughes being like premier top of that list. I have done quite a bit of we'll call it character recon and injury recon. And I have not heard a single person with a good thing to say that isn't either related to him or has something to gain. So, like, not great. I also don't think that he will be there for the Canucks to take because New Jersey is going to get forced into taking him.
Yeah.
But if the Canucks pick nine, what I would say is this. There's no superstars in this draft, but there are contributing complementary players, right? So at 9 and 10, Kent Johnson is a really high ceiling pick. It's high risk, high reward, which quite frankly, the Canucks need. God forbid Mason McTavish to 9. You just like, you sprint to the stage and you just call it a day. Jesper Wallstedt, the goaltender, I have him ranked 3, but I seem to be higher on him than most. Oscar Eliasson. Probably not. Yeah. But yeah, like I would say that there's definitely talent in this draft. It's just not high-end talent. There's Atu Ratu. There's, I'm trying to think, like Dylan Genther, who may or may not be there. Put it this way. Pardon?
LaSalle.
Yeah, Fabian Lysell. There's a ton of talent there. He's a Swede. There are some character questions with him, but I feel like the character questions with Lysell are, if you have a strong enough leadership and dressing room, he could be managed. Whereas like what I'm hearing about Luke Hughes is worse than what I heard about Ryan Merkley. And that's probably not a conversation that you want to be in. So for me, you know, I think
Merkley, that hurt him so bad that he fell all the way to the back of the draft.
Yeah, but people, they won't.
Or the first round, sorry.
The difference here is Luke Hughes won't fall that far because A, his dad, B, his name. Like, he's being propped up on his name right now. Any other player, like if you think about it, go back to 2012 when Morgan Riley was drafted. He was drafted fifth. And I think we can comfortably say out of the five players taken, he is the best one. Right?
For sure.
Okay. Is he better than Nail Yakupov? I would say so.
That's a tough one.
Ryan Murray? Yep. Alex Galchenyuk? Yep. Griffin Reinhart? I don't know if he's playing hockey anymore. So we're going to go with yep. And so, but he had an ACL injury and missed almost the entire season. Luke Hughes has had this injury. The difference here is there are fears that the Luke Hughes injury could impact his mobility and agility, which is his strongest asset. And if he doesn't have mobility and agility, he does not think the game well enough to end up on a top pair. Like he doesn't. To me, that's more of a
reform. The Canucks are going to pass on Hughes if he's there, right? Just because of his connection to Quinn. So,
well, and that's where we get lucky that we slide and New Jersey picks first because they're in the same pressure situation where Jack's going to push.
And you got your glass half full take in for the podcast.
Woo!
Yeah. Look at us.
Positivity.
Wow, are you guys that like hard up for like positivity here that we get one glass half full take on a podcast?
I could promise on that. Yeah.
It's more than I expected.
I'll tell you this. Here's your glass half full. Unless they take Luke Hughes or somebody who is far below the threshold of where they're picking, they will get a contributing player in this draft. Now, if you see just somebody tweeting, like if you see JD tweeting LOL when the Canucks pick, that's probably not a good sign.
Yeah.
So you might want to be concerned about that, but there's a fair chance that they do get a player that will be able to contribute for them. They just need to not mess it up, which I know is asking quite a bit.
That's a high, that's a high request.
It is
here.
A significant asterisk there.
Yeah.
No, that's so tough.
What looks like, and I know Sean kind of wanted to touch on the Sedins too. So, mm-hmm. you know, the latest or what I think we can look to next is probably the hiring of the Sedins here in some sort of player capacity that you've kind of alluded to already. Do you know any more details about what their level of involvement is or how those kind of discussions came up?
I know that they've been interested in alumni, and I think that's more of a PR stunt than anything, with the exception of Roberto Luongo, because he actually has management experience and has kind of worked his way up. And do I think he'd be a fit for GM right now? No, but I absolutely think he'd be a fantastic assistant general manager and certainly an upgrade over the one that they currently have. But with the Sedins, I think it's because they are so involved in the Vancouver community. They are still present there. They pay attention to the game still. Like, they're still intimately involved and they get it. And so for me, I could see them in just kind of a general hockey operations advisory role as they learn kind of the ropes. But one thing I absolutely would leverage them for, maybe two things actually, I would leverage them for relationships with players. Like, I think they would be a fantastic buffer between whether it's owners or management and the players, because I think there needs to be that. And the Sedins are perfect for that, because they've played with guys in that dressing room and they've also dealt with this management and this ownership. And so I think that maybe if we're looking to mend some fences and kind of take a reboot on the culture, they could help with that. The other thing that I would certainly be leveraging them for is player development. I think any time that you can have players who think and see the game and work as hard as the Sedins do and know what it takes to be, I mean, a freaking Hart Trophy winner in this league, like, anytime you can have that, I think you really need to leverage that. And so impact on young players, how to be a professional, and then relationship management is huge. Because I haven't heard one single person say one single bad thing about either Sedin. And so for me, if they have great relationships with anybody and everybody, then you need to be using that.
Yeah, couldn't agree with that more.
So, you know, with Luongo, the, you know, those conversations, of course, you know, there's been a couple rounds of Lombardi. You know, we keep hearing names pop up. And then, you know, apparently there's this big meeting, you know, 48 hours ago with the Aquilini family. And then the result is status quo, other than, of course, you know, bringing the Sedins in some sort of capacity. Best guess, what do you think happened?
Yeah, this was it was pretty shocking because like I hadn't really been paying attention over the last, I would say, week or so. And then I got a text, and I work at the bank during the day. So like I actually have a job that I need to be doing. I got a text from someone that said Benning's getting the axe today. And then I got a phone call from a very reputable person in hockey media who said the Canucks are getting ready to make some changes in management. You will likely be on the list, so be very mindful of what you're saying publicly. And I said, okay. All right. I will do that. And so I had heard that yesterday. And then I go through my day. I speak to some people. I'm kind of doing some recon. What's everybody else hearing? And everyone around the league is hearing the same thing, that Benning's getting the axe. And I'm like, okay, so I've had probably 6 or 7 very reputable people say this to me. So I have no reason to not believe it at this point. Like, it's more vetted than anything else I've looked into. And then Friedman puts that out. So honestly, what I think happened was they were going to axe Benning. It leaked and they kind of got cold feet and reneged and thought, okay, well, if we bring the Sedins in, that will kind of quell the fan anger and the lack of consumer confidence. But to me, that's more damaging to the brand, because now you've legitimately shown that you're willing to flip-flop and not be, not make your decisions with conviction. And like, that's bad for business. Like, it just is. It's really, really bad for business. And so for me, I think that they're listening to fans, but they're afraid to pull the trigger because they do not want to have to pay that contract. But the reality is the public opinion matters at this point, because people are going to stop spending money.
Do you know if Portnoy's still running?
That I don't know. I know almost nothing about the whole Jeff Cordell situation, other than the fact that he was due to be hired, I believe, a few years ago. And Jim and John basically went, nope, we don't want that. And the Aquilinis, or Francesco, capitulated to that. Because everything I know is that the other two Aquilini brothers want Benning gone. And so Francesco essentially like is winning the war right now. But there's a part of me that thinks like if he is teeter-tottering on it, then it's almost like he wants to do this as a screw you, which is also bad for business. So
wait, I'm saying screw really you to your fans is bad for business? That's crazy. Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not really sure that's like the best thing to do. Like, I think maybe not firing Trevor Linden probably would have helped.
Well, and that's like
they mutually parted ways, I thought.
Yeah. Amicably.
Yes, yeah. They took his powers away and said, you will now do nothing, but we're not going to fire you. Okay,
so I posted it on Instagram and there was like a shaking hands putting it.
Yeah.
See, and I think like I look at the Sedins as very, very smart and brilliant people that are very, very like, they're the pinnacle of respect in Vancouver. Like there's nobody, I would say, more respected in all of British Columbia than the Sedin twins. And
people would die for the Sedins.
Absolutely.
Like, they would die.
But the same could have been said for Trevor Linden too. Like I know, yeah. I have multiple friends that are named after Linden. I have like, I know tons of people that absolutely adore Trevor Linden. And I honestly still do. Like I still hold Linden in very high esteem. I don't blame him for this.
He redeemed himself at the end.
Right. I just like, to me, they've already played this card. They've already played the heartstring alumni card. So you can't parade the next two with the exact same group and hope for a different result. Like at this point, I like to think Vancouver is a very smart market. Like, there's a lot of really smart fans here.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% without a doubt. Like, there's not Neanderthals running around. There's a few on Twitter that are absolutely, are we allowed to swear?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Batshit crazy.
Yes.
And I think everyone knows who I'm talking about. Starts with a T, ends with a J. And so, like, honestly, yes, you have some absolute loon balls who have no idea what they're doing, but you also have the majority of the fan base. And what I would say is the Canucks have one of the smartest, most in-tune fan bases in the NHL. Between the Canucks army, like, you have three or four people working in NHL front offices that came from that site. So, yeah, like, clearly they can't be that stupid. Right. So I think Vancouver is very in tune, and generally bringing in an alumni like would work. But think about it from this perspective. What if you do bring in the Sedins and it doesn't work and they have to leave under the same circumstances as Linden? Like, that's what somebody is going to burn the Rogers Arena to the ground. They will burn it to the ground.
And I like how you used it, you know, how I'd leverage them. One of the things I'd use to leverage the Sedins is they can't do that. The Aquilinis, there's no way they could run three franchise legends out of the building. So, you know, with Linden, it was okay. You know, you haven't done this before, but, you know, if this kind of conflict comes up again, the Sedins, you'd think, have the backbone to be able to say, listen, are you really now going to run another two legends out the door? Do you have any idea how catastrophic that would be for business? There is no way to mutually have us part ways this time, buddy. So, you know, like, that's one of the...
No, they'll make Aquilini fire them.
Right, exactly, right? Like, they will not quit. Like, there is no chance that they will agree to a mutually parted ways situation, right?
Or no, they will... One of two things will happen. They will get fired. They will resign. Either one of them, terrible, because those are the two most highly selling jerseys in the history of the franchise. And so, like, really? Now you have three jerseys in the rafters and you don't have a relationship with them? Like, and I can kind of bring this back to Toronto. Like, for the longest time, Dave Keon, who, if you remove current Leafs, who will likely surpass him for greatest Leaf of all time, for the longest time, they did not have a relationship with Dave Keon. And it wasn't until Brendan Shanahan went and mended that fence. And a lot of Leaf fans kind of believe, and like rightfully or wrongfully, like, I think it's kind of odd to be believing in this, but it was like the Keon curse, where ever since Keon and I believe it was Ballard had the falling out, the Leafs have essentially been cursed. Brendan Shanahan goes and mends that fence, and like a month later, they win the right to draft Austin Matthews. And a lot of Leaf fans went, see? Right? And so if you do this and you screw Linden and then you screw the Sedins, like, you are asking for it from the hockey gods. Like, you just are.
Oh, you're forever cursed if you do that. Like, if you believe in curses, there's nothing more cursed that you could possibly do than disparaging the names of three of the most household names of franchise history. Like
if you want to start a fight in Vancouver, go to a bar and say the Sedins suck. You'll get punched out in 2 seconds.
Call them sisters, Sedin and my sisters, blood, my blood still boils. Like, just the first off, the misogyny of it all. The second of all, to like diminish how they played and how tough they are. Like, oh boy,
oh my God. They took abuse every game.
They were the toughest players.
I don't know why anybody has like the actual nerve to say McDavid, MacKinnon, Crosby, Matthews, Marner, like to say any of those guys are soft. Like, there should be 11 million cross-checking penalties per season drawn by both, like, all of them.
Absolutely.
They get cross-checked 7 times a shift. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. So to me, like, the Canucks have already screwed up with Trevor Linden. They cannot screw up with the two best players in franchise history, because, like, at that point, you'll have to sell the team. Like, you will have to sell the team.
And my God, if Trevor Linden ever writes a book, but like a tell-all.
Oh my God.
I will be like camping outside Chapters waiting for it to hit the shelf. Like,
oh, take yeah, my that money. Thing will
take
be
my money.
Exactly. Like, here, just and take my money.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing I'm more intrigued about as to what went down than Trevor Linden's.
I want a Judd Brackett departure. Tell-all as well.
Yes. Yes, please. They can combine.
Yeah, I need
save me
that.
Some money on a book.
Exactly. Oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Poor Judd. That just got like so out of hand. And then they have the nerve to try and paint him as the bad guy. Like, who do you think you're fooling?
Well, and then what's going to happen? Like, we've seen this already. We've seen it happen with Linden. We've seen it happen with Brackett. What happens when it's Ian Clark next, or when it's Travis Green next,
or when, like, it's Elias Pettersson?
Yeah, yeah. Or when the prized possession or prized acquisition of JT Miller is the guy, right? Like, that was the guy that everybody was like, yeah, see, he's good. He's the MVP. And now if he's asking for a trade out and he goes, what's the defense then? That he actually sucked and we shouldn't have acquired him in the first place? Like, there's no rhetoric that you could come up with that actually makes that look good on the management team.
Well, it's the German saying, right? It's like actively making things worse when you're trying to make them better.
We need the word, because that is obviously going to be the title of this episode.
Absolutely.
So the word is Verschlimmbesserung. And I will type that for you.
Thank you, because I would have no hope in spelling that.
No, there will be, it's, I think it's like 15 letters.
Oh boy.
But like, no, there are no umlauts.
Oh, no good. Way. Okay, well, that saves me there at least. Yeah.
There's no umlauts. I'll type it for you properly so you can just copy and paste it.
I greatly appreciate that. That is new slogan for the Canucks right now.
What are we? I don't know if you know who Taylor Twellman is. He's like a soccer commentator. He had the famous "What are we doing?" after the U.S. missed the World Cup, and I feel like Canucks fans have every right to be like, "What are we doing? Like, what are we doing?"
Yeah,
and that is Leaf fans lived through that for 20 years. I am still like angry that, like, now, because I still like the Leafs? Yes, I do, and I cheer for their success. I also know people, so like, it's a little different. But working in hockey has kind of destroyed my fandom, and I will never forgive the hockey team for completely robbing me of being even acceptable at any point during the period when I grew up. Like, they were not even, it wasn't like, oh, like, we got a playoff series here. No, it was absolute trash for the first 16 years of my life.
Yeah, like, it was the last playoff series win.
Exactly. And the team wasn't even that good.
No.
Like, the last legitimate good team was 2000.
Yeah.
That was the last legitimate team. That was good. And that is 21 years ago. That is not acceptable. Like, are you kidding? Now, I think this team is better. Like, the 2021 iteration is better. It's just a matter of whether they can win or not. But, like, Canucks fans, like, you've had, I would say, like, five or six years now of, like, not bad, but, like, horrendous.
Yeah.
Right? And you still got a playoff series win out of it. So, like, what?
That's true.
I don't even know at this point. Like, that wasn't a good thing. They should not, like,
no.
Yeah, oh, look, these players got experience. Yeah, no, and you actually actively screwed your team for, like, the next 3 years.
We took Vegas to game 7.
Yeah. We're as good as Vegas.
I just wish there was some blowhard with a beard on a podcast saying that last year. Jesus.
Yeah. I know. Malcolm and I were very conflicted last year.
I was not.
No, like, after they beat Minnesota, right? Because then we had to switch gears.
Oh, right, yeah.
Now it's like they have to go all the way now. Like,
This
is it. They've put all their chips in. It's cup or bust now. And this team isn't good enough to win a cup. So
yeah. As soon as we cemented it was the pick, we, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
I was never conflicted on what I wanted.
Yeah. Right. Poor choice of words for me on that one.
So looping back to I was saying I'm just trying to compile what possibly has happened here, because it's been as bizarre as like you could possibly imagine, like no one had this on their Apocalypse 2021 bingo card. So the only thing that somewhat makes sense to me is because, again, they've clearly tried to bring people in. Obviously, and I go back to a Brian Burke thing, you know, and I think that's probably the reason why he was let go as soon as the Aquilinis took over total control of the team, is his kind of infamous line to owners is, if I'm the GM of the team, there are two hands on the wheel and both of them are mine. And clearly correct. The Aquilinis do not like that. So I think, again, of course, you know, Gillis, you know, hey, he was new and did very well. So the
Aquilinis probably shouldn't have fired him.
Probably shouldn't have fired him, but I won't digress into that right now, I promise, because we don't have another 6 hours. So, it, you know, it had immediate success and then started coming in, you know, more and more after, of course, things started coming off the rails a little bit. And so, you know, when that happened, of course, you know, they're getting more experience as NHL owners and they're getting this illusion that they start to know what's going on. So now they're at the point whenever they're speaking with these candidates, they're pretty upfront and honest with them that, listen, you know, we do like some level of control behind the scenes. You're the public face. Of course, you're taking care of everything. But, you know, any significant decisions we, you know, certainly have influence on and we have decisions of our own. And they are really struggling to find someone who's willing to sign off on that and take that job. So they keep trying and they keep coming and thinking that maybe they're close. And that's how some of these leaks have got out. And what's happened here with that last one is they thought the Sedins, and they had a deal with the Sedins, that they were going to come in clean house as the president and GM. But because of the Sedins are so smart, they went, whoa, 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 we're not ready to be the president and GM. We need to learn the ropes first. We need to, you know, get a couple of years experience like the successful GMs have done, like Iserman. So we're not ready to take in that. But the leak had already happened. And then they went, well, shit, you know, we don't know what to do. And of course, then they, you know, leak to Friedman that Benning is coming back because they don't want to bring in someone new for, you know, 2-3 years here to then just have that person replaced by, you know, President Hank and General Manager Dank. My best guess.
So what I would say is like, okay, so when I was in New Jersey, this is very, like, what I keep hearing about the Aquilinis is very reminiscent about what I dealt with on a near daily basis with Josh Harris. So the two principal owners in New Jersey are Josh and David, right? David is super educated, super prepared, asks very well thought out questions. Like, you could tell he pays attention more than just looking at the box score, right? And then there was Josh. And I am literally not joking when I tell you this man did not know that the NHL had a salary cap in the year 2018. So, like, he would call Ray nearly every day, which I feel like Aquilini and Benning have that sort of relationship. And what I could tell you is, from a GM perspective, that gets very frustrating because you want to make moves, but you consistently feel like they need to be approved by ownership. Case in point. When the Devils traded for Patrick Maroon and Michael Grabner at the deadline, we traded for Michael Grabner. We had to get ownership approval to bring in Michael friggin' Grabner. No idea why that was the case, but we did. And we got the approval. That's fine. Then, like, 2 minutes, it's like 2:58. And we get a deal with Edmonton for Patrick Maroon. We do not have time to call Josh Harris and be like, hey, can we do this? Ray just said, we're doing it. And Patrick Maroon ended up being a fantastic piece for the Devils down the stretch. But Josh was furious with Ray because he didn't call to get the approval. And it's like, we do not have time to call you at 2:58. So it's one of those things where, do you want me to run the team or not? Because if you want to run the team, then you run the team. And you can run it straight into the ground. Because the only owner that is even remotely qualified to be commenting on the ins and outs of player acquisition is Mario Lemieux. If your name is not Mario Lemieux, I do not care about what your player evaluation opinion is. Because you are too rich and have way too many other things to be worrying about. So if you want to be an owner that has one hand on the wheel, like, that's just not going to be successful. I understand if you want to be kept in the loop. So things like, hey, we're going to dole out $100 million to Connor McDavid. I want to run that by the owner because he's signing the checks, right? But, like, I don't know, acquiring $200,000 in salary for the next 3 months feels like something that you shouldn't have to run by the owner, right? Or, like, who we're drafting feels like something you shouldn't have to run by the owner, right? That is why the Oilers ended up picking Nail Yakupov, because Daryl Cates wanted him. And how did that go, right? So it's one of those things where, yes, you can have a say in terms of monetary stuff, but running the team, like, you are not qualified to do that. I'm sorry, but no. So you just, like, you have to understand, like, yes, you're signing the checks, but you signed up to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where you kind of have to understand that you have hired people, and just like in your other businesses, you have to trust them that they are going to make the correct decisions. And if you don't trust them, you need to fire them.
Yeah, that's just it.
So, you know, which leads me to, there are few people willing to put their name on someone else's work at this time, right? And that's why Benning's still around, because he's very much willing at this point to stick around for the paycheck and the prestige of the title and, you know, the illusion that he's got his, you know, a hand on the wheel at this point.
And his daughter's Instagram clout.
So, of course, sorry. How could I possibly forget? Because how could you, like, to me, again, I said it on, like, if you had any self-respect at this point, how do you face the fans? Like, I know why he does so few press conferences, and certainly why there's never been any, you know,
because he gets fined for tampering all the time.
Man,
I'm like, going for
talk about an early red flag, eh?
Oh, like, dude, wow.
And that trade would have been potentially Horvat and that pick. That would have been Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah, Horvat and Dubois for Subban.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Montreal would have been laughing like for decades.
Thank you, Columbus. Thank you.
Okay, so here's one for you. And I only know this because I am intimately familiar with what happens over there. There is some disgruntled things happening in the Bayern Munich front offices. So much so that the entire coaching staff has decided to resign after this year because of one dude who is the technical director, which is the equivalent of a GM, deciding he is going to sit on the bench and attempt to coach the team during games. That is not ideal, especially when the players hate him.
And an example of what I kind of talked about, right?
Exactly. But the difference is before this doofus was brought in a few years ago, Bayern had enough players that they A, have the leadership, and B, there are so many, like, I think 18 of the 23 players on Bayern's roster were called to the Euros. Like, that's obscene. Yeah. That's extremely high, right? And then you have Alphonso Davies, who is literally going to wear the armband for Canada. So, like, okay, sign that up. But even they are having issues, but they managed to have success in spite of that because they've been set up so well, right? Because there are, you have a board that comes in and they're filled with legends like Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Oliver Kahn are more famous in Germany than the Sedins are in British Columbia. Like, that is their level of legend there. Then you add current legends like Manuel Neuer and Thomas Müller, who have won World Cups, and Neuer is, like, widely considered the greatest goalkeeper of all time. And so you have pieces in there to quell some of the nonsense. In Vancouver, as soon as the Sedins left, there was nobody there to quell any nonsense. And it basically fell on Horvat. It's fallen on Elias Pettersson. It's fallen on, like, it fell on Jacob Markstrom quite a bit. And now you just, those players are not equipped to deal with that situation. And you don't have the guy at the top like Bayern does, because you chose to get rid of Trevor Linden, right? So it's one of those things where you can have issues if you have stopgaps in place to be able to manage those. And that's why I think the Sedins will be a good fit. The problem is you actually have to listen to them.
Yeah, and just how much leverage and power, say, does the Sedins have? If
yeah, like if you bring the Sedins in.
Yeah, they don't listen to anybody.
I don't want to hear Fellini.
Yeah, like that's the thing, though, is like this is a front office or a tandem that historically doesn't play well with others, right? Like there's a reason why Jed Brackett's not around anymore. There's a reason why Trevor Linden's not around anymore and countless others. They don't play well with others and they don't replace them. Like Jeff Stipek hasn't even been replaced yet. Like, so the president of hockey operations and the president of business operations are two vacant positions that are currently being also occupied by Jim Benning. So,
whoa. He's the president of business operations?
Well, there's no one else.
Nobody's so there.
I guess a lot more makes sense now, eh?
They're vacant positions. They've never been replaced. You have
somebody with a high school education running your entire franchise.
I'll take this one. Yes.
Explains a lot, right? Like that's where we're at. Like
I am so sorry.
So you have a guy that's general manager, chief executive or chief amateur scout, because he hasn't replaced Jed Brackett either, president of business operations and president of hockey operations. Those are four very, very full-time executive positions, all being worn by the same guy. And then we wonder why we're struggling and we wonder why things aren't going well. Like, we don't even have words. Like, is there a German word for that? Like, that's like
idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same one, actually.
I'm speechless. I can't imagine there is any scenario where it is acceptable to have somebody with a high school education and no business background at all.
No, none.
Running the business operations. If that's true, then if I'm Gary Bettman, I am on the phone with Aquilini being like, excuse me.
Well, I think that's
what
an interesting,
is going on.
Like, yeah, I think that's an interesting point, is that Gary Bettman and the NHL do have obviously a vested interest in how well Vancouver does, right? Like it's one of your premier franchises. It's one of your
revenue
sharing. It's one of your few Canadian markets. It's one of your most passionate markets. And look at what's happening. Like it's not just the like I was saying this before to people, like this isn't just the Vancouver Canucks brand being impacted anymore. It's the Aquilini brand. It's the NHL brand. Like the NHL isn't going to do well in Vancouver if this continues for too much longer. Like the season ticket thing, that's actually way worse than I thought it was. Like I knew that there was a lot of people canceling. I didn't realize that it was into, you know, triple digits.
Four digits.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, at what point do you, as Aquilini, wake up and realize that there needs to be a humongous change? And, like, Arthur Griffith came out in the media, former Canuck owner, and even said there needs to be a full brand reset. Full brand reset.
Yeah.
Like, and he's been on our show. He talks about, he likes Benning, right?
Speaks glowingly of him.
Well, and it's, you know what? If you want to have Benning as a chief scout or a director of player personnel, like, he's good at that job, but he's famously not a people person, which if the title manager is in your job title, like, you probably need to be good with people. And you certainly cannot have the guy who's running, unless his name is Lou Lamoriello, you can't have somebody running your hockey operations department and your business department. Like, New Jersey was a friggin' tire fire while I was there, but at least we had Hugh Weber, who was the president of the Devils, right? And now, hilarious fun fact, the new president of the Devils is the, I believe, is the CEO's son-in-law. So, like, nepotism is alive and well. Yeah, love
what else is new in hockey, hey?
Yeah. Oh, God. You know what? I would don't even like bring up the Devils hockey operations department, because the entire thing is nepotism with the exception of Marie, who was there before Lou was. Like, she's queen. We love her. But like, you could say what you want, but at least they had people like running the top part of the business, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like in Vancouver, I feel like it should be, the NHL should make it compulsory that like you have someone running your business side and you have someone running your hockey side. Like that should be an NHL rule.
Otherwise, you're going to
end up with things like this.
Yeah, I almost think it's not, because it's so obvious, right? Like it's so obvious. That's what you do. Yeah,
like use your brain.
Right? Like you're talking to billionaire owners who don't feel that it's important to have somebody running that. Like that doesn't compute to me. Like that just,
yeah. Like, so like Brendan Shanahan in Toronto, like he absolutely, like he speaks to Kyle Dubas every day, right? He's president of the Leafs, but he lets Dubas do his thing. And where Shanahan comes in is he presents to the board, like he manages upwards and he handles things like he oversees the marketing, the ticketing, the messaging, the branding, so that Kyle Dubas doesn't have to worry about that, right? The man is busy enough. He oversees what is like a growing massive department at this point, mm-hmm. right? So you can't have someone who oversees the hockey side of things also overseeing the business side of things. Odds are, one, totally unqualified, if not for one, for both, right? And two, there's just not enough time in the day. There is barely enough time in the day to be a GM if you're doing your job well. And so how can you be expected to be worrying about attending marketing meetings or ticketing meetings or worrying about what is being tweeted from the Twitter account? Like, who cares?
Well, right? Rachel, so he ran out of time. So
now we know why. Shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair though, you should not be if you're the GM of the team, your number one priority needs to be running the team. So this running out of time thing. All that tells me is you are piss poor at time management. That's all that tells me. And if you're not good at time management, then you probably shouldn't be a general manager.
I also had that observation. I just don't, like, how can you pretend that you're competing with the Maple Leafs out there when you have such a limited front office like that? Like, you know, one team is literally, you know, like, I don't even know the size of the head office, but
millions of dollars, millions,
right? And how can you not see that as a more prudent investment than dumping on players, or, you know, dumping cap into the salary cap? Because it just comes off like they're just signaling to the market, hey, look, like we're spending to the cap, we're doing everything we are, because your average fan doesn't know John Weisbrod, doesn't know Chris Gear, barely knows, you know, Jim Benning, your kind of real average typical fan. And they're just counting on that kind of complacency that we just are willing to go to the games and stand up and cheer for goals and boo when the other team scores and buy jerseys because they look cool and they come out with different ones every year, and, you know, buy their overpriced beer or the new vodka sodas, which, yeah, probably will still try. You know,
hey man, at least it's not as expensive as going to the ACC for a game. $19 a beer.
That is insane.
Wow.
And what do you want to bet it's going to be 20?
Yeah. A lot of money, yeah.
But like, honestly, you make such a good point. Like, but the thing is, and Michael McCurdy originally came up with this, and then I had somebody tell me that like this should be my slogan. You could pay me $100,000 a year to tell you just 3 times per year, don't do that, and I would save you 10 times or more what you pay me, right?
Yeah.
And so you can say like, okay, we're not dumping into the cap, because I guarantee you Cam Lawrence is cheaper than Tyler Myers, and Cam Lawrence would have saved you from paying Tyler Myers, right? So like, if you invested in your hockey operations department, you would actually save money, because, and I know this like for a fact, Brandon Pridham and Lawrence Gilman make more than half of the league's general managers. Like they're AGMs and they make more than half of the league. And I don't think anybody can argue that Brandon Pridham doesn't earn his paycheck. No.
Now you're hinting at something that I've always really wanted to know. Do you know what Benning gets paid each year?
I don't know. I believe it is in, like, he barely cracks seven figures.
Wow.
So we're talking that they're so worried about spending that they are willing to have him spend God knows how much of the cap.
So let's say let's say on the high end, let's say he makes $2 million, which no, right? Are you are so hard up for money that you don't want to pay someone $2 million to sit at home. So you'd rather him negotiate a contract that's potentially going to be worth $90 million or contracts that are cumulatively worth $150 million?
Yeah.
Which option seems better to you? Does it seem like it's better to pay a million-ish to have a guy sit at home? Or is it better for the guy that you don't trust to sign $150 million worth of contracts?
Well, and just how quickly are you going to lose that in the season ticket sales? Like, that's
it's already happening.
I thought it was at least 1.5-2, like...
I know what the most expensive GM in the league makes, and I know Benning makes less than half of that. So, like, it's unbelievable. Like, I believe Carolina's GM makes like 450K, maybe 500K now. Because Tom Dundon believes that you can have more people doing different things, you get more perspectives, that'll be better. And, like, I think we can all agree that it's going well in Carolina. Then you have the Leafs approach, which is we will spend all of the money on earth to get the best people available to us. And I think we can agree that that is also going well. And then you kind of have Vancouver, and the Aquilinis definitely do have the money to at least do what Carolina's doing, right? Not everyone, and I totally understand, not everyone has the money to do what the Leafs and the Rangers and the Blackhawks are able to do. That's fine. But look at what Tom Dundon's done. He's been fantastic. And so I think that that's a model that teams that don't want to be spending a ton of money, the Aquilinis are clearly one of them, I think that's a model that they should be going after, because clearly Carolina's had success with it. But that comes with the fact that, again, do you want to pay a guy a million or two to sit at home and gain all this goodwill back with your fans who are now going to come and spend money? Or do you want to let him sign $150 million worth of contracts? I don't know that I'd let him sign $150 worth of contracts. Never mind $150 million. And then have to fire him in October when at the home opener everyone's chanting "Fire Benning."
Yeah. Well, and when it's probably at that point, like, we're already seeing fans turn on the Aquilini family. What happens when nothing changes and October rolls around? Are they chanting "Fire Benning" or are they chanting "Sell the team"? Like, because that's honestly probably what they're going to be chanting. Like, it's going to be the Melnick situation in Ottawa, but here, if they don't change anything, I'd still think that there's time.
I didn't even think of that.
Right? Like, what hurts your brand more? You could easily fire the GM, but then you're not even satisfying the market at that point when you have, you know, countless thousands of people chanting to sell the team in your building.
Are they that mad?
Oh, yeah. There's a banner that I saw this yesterday. There's a banner that was paid for in 6 hours that is going to fly around Vancouver saying basically Francesco out. And then there's people organizing to meet at Rogers Arena with, like, pickets and everything to protest. Like, they're that mad already.
Like, yeah. Oh my God. Oh, jeez. Like, okay, we had a bad in Leafsland, but, like, not that bad. Nobody made a protest.
Like, this Benning news is not going over well over here. Like, I don't know what they expected was going to happen, but if they didn't expect this, then they have no foresight at all. Like, this was pretty predictable. It's just happening really fast, right?
Yeah, like, it seems like it's different because like in Toronto, we never had it, the vitriol was to the coaches, and Larry Tannenbaum is one of Canada's most successful businessmen. And I think the reason he is he's very good at delegating. Same with Jeff Molson, actually, in Montreal, except there's like a French thing at play there where you have to like speak French. But like they're very in tune and they're very astute businessmen and they make good business decisions. Like everything they do is based in the business, right? And I think Aquilini's are more like they're a fan running the team. And we see that with Daryl Cates, and it hasn't gone well. And they got McDavid, but if they didn't, they'd be a mess, right? And so, like, I think, honestly, if it's at the point where fans want the Aquilini's out, the only way that's going to happen is if they stop showing up. So Canucks fans, like, if you're listening and you actually want to make an impact, stop buying Canucks stuff, stop showing up, stop doing that. Because if you continue to show up and pay, then you're not really protesting anything. You need to do what Manchester United fans and Chelsea fans and City fans did when their owners announced the Super League. Not only did they chant owners out, and they have been for over a month now, they flat out did not show up to a game. And then they prevented their team from even entering the stadium to play a game. And then both teams lost so much money off of that because they had to push the broadcasting to a Wednesday as opposed to a Saturday, which is a huge issue in England. Right. So if Canucks fans actually want to have an impact, stop showing up. Literally stop showing up.
Yeah. Have to speak with your wallet. Like you have to literally put your money where your mouth is on this if that's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
that's super unfortunate.
Yeah.
It is. It's heartbreaking.
But like it doesn't seem like we have any other option.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking because like we just 10 years ago, this is the 10-year anniversary of the 2011 finals when we were the best team in hockey. We won the president's trophy. We're 10 years later. We should have won the cup.
Had Colin Campbell not been allowed anywhere near that series, I think he would have.
Like Kate Whitmore wasn't because of his supposed bias.
Yeah, because he had once played for the Bruins, so ridiculous, or for the Canucks, sorry, the ridiculous. It's heartbreaking to see how it's gone from that to this, and then to see, you know, accusations of like you're not a real fan if you haven't done this or done that, or this is so unique to Vancouver. None of those things are true. Like if
you, no, that's all trash. Like you don't get to this true. Whole gatekeeping, and I see it with Sam all the time. Yeah. Right, she has to deal with this all the time, and I'm probably going to use this platform to say this. Like if you're a gatekeeping fan, fuck off. Seriously? Like, are you kidding?
We'll use that as
we're trying to grow the game here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hockey already has, like, no offense to two members of this show, but like, hockey has too many white men. Okay? Like, there are too many white men. We need some more women. We need some more people of color. We need some more Asian Pacific Islanders. Like, literally. And anything that is gatekeeping to me is absolute nonsense. You're not a real fan. Who are you, Mr. Twitter man, that gets to decide what a real fan is? What are your credentials? Yeah. Oh, you don't have any? Okay, shut up. Like, it's honestly ridiculous. And I don't think it's a coincidence that as a woman, Sam has to deal with that, right? She is like, she actually checks her mentions, but like sometimes she'll check mine because she knows I don't. And she's like, have you like looked at your mentions today? I'm like, nope. Why? And she goes, because they're a mess.
And see, I'm like, I love Sam for that.
Terrific asset to have on your side, isn't she?
Yeah, Sam is going to represent me at my next contract negotiation because of how the... So in New Jersey, my contract was signed on a napkin. Like it was actually signed on a paper towel.
Just like Mark Messier.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute, like, and when things started to go south, like miraculously they showed up with a real contract backdated, but I was like, when things started to go south, like I could easily just like
walk
and
away.
Not and it would not be a valid contract. Like But yeah, so she said, I'm like, I need your advice on something. And she immediately came back with, don't sign anything on a napkin, please. But yeah, any gatekeeping fans, you're not a real fan and you're not this, you're not that, betting bros and bitter bros and whatever. It's all crap. Everyone's allowed to be a fan in the way that they want to be a fan. And if that means they want to be critical of the team, then they can be critical of the team. Because guess what? I think it's, you're going to be hard pressed to find someone who says, I'm not a fan of hockey, right?
Yeah.
And I have been very critical of the game, specifically how it's officiated or how it isn't open to people of diverse backgrounds. It is okay to be a fan and be critical of what you are a fan of, because quite frankly, that's how they improve.
Yeah, that's how you show that you want better. We want the things that we love to get better. Yeah.
Like there's nothing worse than apathy. Yeah. Right. So to say, oh, you're not a real fan because in the Canucks instance, like you're speaking negatively. No, I'm speaking negatively because I'm a fan and I'm sick and tired of watching this circus go on. Like you might as well in this theme song for the Canucks, like when they come out on the ice, it should just be like, do. Like that's literally what it should be.
And it would still be less of a circus on the back of the front office.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's going to be interesting offseason, to say the least. But I hope this isn't too forward. I hope it ends up with you being in Vancouver, whatever it ends up being.
I would love to be Vancouver. And like as critical as I am, like I do it because like it's such a passionate fan base, and I really do think there's a path to success there. Mm-hmm. And it starts with biting the bullet and pulling the trigger on Banning and Co. And I think there are some really smart people that you can bring in on a bargain. And that would save you a ton of money in the long run. And so I think if you look at it from opportunity cost, like what's the opportunity cost of not getting rid of Benning?
Oh, huge. Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. It would be different if those two contracts weren't up this year, but they are. And so the opportunity cost could be enormous. And so I don't know that from a business perspective that that's a chance you can afford to take.
No, I agree with you. And hopefully we see it. I mean, now that the regular season is finally over, we should see. I mean, they have to change something. They've got to change something. They can't come back with.
It'll be Travis Green and Ian Clark. They're not coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I think, yeah. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
that's that.
Yeah. And on a super Debbie Downer note. But feet,
send me feet.
The essence of our friendship. Awesome.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Rachel. This is, we greatly appreciate all the time that you gave to us today. And we went way, way over time today, but it was well worth it for the opportunity to be able to talk to you about, well, everything that's going on right now. There's a lot. So I just wanted, before like we end off here, is there anything that you wanted to plug? I know you're with Staff and Graph podcast, which I'm a huge fan of the show.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to give this opportunity to you as well to, if you had anything you wanted to plug.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm sure that'll be tagged like at Rachel Dory. Like Sean said, Staff and Graph podcast, we do breakdown. So it's a little bit of a different podcast than your kind of regular hockey show. I write for Elite Prospects, and look out for the paper that I have coming about quantifying hockey sense.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, that'll be awesome. So
yeah, I've decided I'm going to make it public.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to read that. So awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, and enjoy the rest of your, I guess, Wednesday afternoon.
Also, at Canucks, hire me.
Yes, please. Like, do something that we all want, and we want Rachel.
There's like a legitimate segment of the fan base that is on this train.
Yeah, I have a very short list of people that I want. It's the computer boys, and it's you. That's like that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and the Sedins.
And the Sedins. Yes, I'll take the Sedins at that point too.
Actually, we should hire Mike Johnson too. All right, Mike and Ray, just hire them both.
Absolutely. Those two are amazing. Amazing.
They're way too smart to just be talking heads.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Anytime. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Point Shot Hockey. We do have a new sponsor, Hapson.ca. They are a clothing company out of Montreal that specializes in hockey stylized athletic apparel. They are found at en.hapson.ca. And if you use the promo code AREA51, you can get 25% off the entire site. So go there for any of your t-shirts, your pants, hoodies, hat type apparel. So go visit the fine folks there. Use that promo code AREA51 to get 25% off of your order. So you can find links to all of these at area51sportsnetwork.com.